going to call the Subcommittee on Elections to order. We have a quorum present. Has anyone had a chance to look at the minutes from previous meeting?
Mr. Chair, I can move those minutes from the meeting of January 30th, okay, if you'd like.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll moves the minutes from January 30th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes have passed. So today we have a couple of bills up. And I just want to sort of go through the landscape of the meeting and how we're going to do it. As a reminder to testifiers and members, that the decorum of committee is to go through the chair. So if you have a response, always start with the chair. We'll have roughly 2 to 3 minutes for each of the testifiers, and then we're going to have roughly 3 to 5 minutes for questions of the actual testifier, instead of trying to save everybody up and then all of that. For the members of the public who may have come here today to speak that haven't been on a list as of right now, I want to remind, we may not have time, but I want to remind you that this bill also is going to have at least 2 other stops in government operations and government operations as well as public safety. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the gavel over to Chair Bernardi, who will take over the meeting. I will sit at the desk, and if I could have who's our first testifier? Mike Freeman and Steve Simon, if you are there, if you could come up and join me, that would be great.
Hello and welcome to the committee, Chair Dean. I want to have you open your remarks.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee and members of the public. My name is Raymond Dean. In addition to being a state representative, I'm a convicted felon. Today I bring before this committee House File 40, a bill related to the restoration of voting rights for those who have been convicted of a felony offense and are no longer locked up in a correction facility, or for those who have never spent a day inside a correction facility. This bill is similar to bills introduced in 2002, then by State Representative Keith Ellison, who is now our State Attorney General. Over the past 17 years, it has gained greater and greater bipartisan support, and in recent years, the Republican Chair of Public Safety was also the chief author. House File 40 again has several Republican co-authors. It's time for Minnesota to pass this bill. Currently, roughly 62,000 people in Minnesota are under some type of felony supervision, either locked up in one of our several correctional facilities, or they are out, and roughly 53,000 Minnesotans who are in the community doing all that they can to lead their best lives. This bill would allow those convicted of a felony who are no longer locked up or have never been incarcerated to vote in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota would join 14 other states along with the District of Columbia, while we would join states like Oregon, Illinois, Massachusetts. We would also join states like Ohio, Utah, and our neighbors to the northwest, North Dakota. It's time for Minnesota to join these other states. I'm going to end my testimony because I know we have a lot of other individuals. But first, Madam Chair, I believe there are a few amendments. I have an author's amendment that I would like to put it in the statement that the author would like, but I think I'll hang for a couple seconds. And before we move on, well, no, I think we can move on now. I would move my amendment, the author's amendment, and I believe that that is A1.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I think it would be in order if the chair were first to move his bill, and then we can
I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. I'll move my bill.
Okay, thank you. Chair Dean moves his bill, House Bill 40, and I am going to look to see where we're sending that to.
We will be returning it to government operations.
Okay, it'll be returned to GovOps.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And then I would also at this time like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay, so Representative Dean moves his A1 amendment to House File 40 labeled A1. Does everyone have the amendment?
If I could state what the A1 amendment actually does. It removes Section 7, which was a repealer that was replaced earlier in an earlier version that would repeal a certain section. County attorneys came to me actually last time around. I wasn't able to correct it this time around with concerns about that it may be more encompassing than what was originally intended. So we will leave that. We will take that repealer out of the bill and the statute will remain intact.
Okay, so so getting it in the shape that you would like, thank you. Is there any discussion? Okay, so getting the Chair Dean's bill in the order that he wants, those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
I believe there are a few other amendments as well, Madam Chair.
Right. Just one moment, please. Okay. I have an amendment labeled A2-4, I believe. Just A2.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A2.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Nat. I mean, Representative
Thank
Nash.
You for that.
Yeah, right. Is there Representative Nash moves the amendment A2? Does and everyone has a copy of that
Madam
as
Chair,
well?
Madam Chair, I would also request a roll call.
Okay. Representative Nash requests a roll call. Could you please speak to your amendment?
Yeah, Madam Chair, the bill that Chair Dean has offered does not stratify the types of potential felonies that have been committed, and as is per some of the other states in our union, they have articulated such specific crimes. I believe Nevada and Wyoming and many other states. So we'd like to move that amendment and ask for the roll call.
Okay. Do you have any comments, Chair?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. While I appreciate Representative Nash's amendment, in Minnesota, currently, we make no differentiation when individuals' rights to vote are returned to them after they have completed their probation or they have completed their supervision. And one of the things that this bill does, which is critical, and I'm sure that Secretary Simon will speak to, is it actually creates a bright line. Creates a bright line for those individuals who are locked up, are not allowed to vote. And by the way, there are two other states in the United States that actually allow people locked up to vote. It creates that bright line between those individuals who are inside and locked up and those who are outside. And what that bright line does is it adds clarity on who can and cannot vote. And if we begin to break down every particular crime relative to that, I think it just creates it. Tons and tons of complications. So I would ask members to vote against the A2 amendment.
And Madam Chair,
yes,
if I could,
Representative
to
Nash.
Further elucidate on this. This is an amendment to articulate those that have committed election felonies, and I think that's particularly salient to Chair Dean's desired outcome. So these are people who are going to be restored having committed election crimes. So Once again, I think this is an important amendment, and we would urge its adoption.
Representative
Dean. And Madam Chair, I would just add to Representative Nash's comments is currently after an individual who's been convicted of a felony for elections is able to vote after their time of supervision is done.
Thank you. Now we will be taking a roll call on Amendment 2. Amendment 2. Chair Dean.
I would vote no.
Bonner.
No.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Bernardi. No. Representative Halverson. Representative Mann.
No.
Representative New. Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Halverson and Representative New. Okay. With four members saying voting nay, two ayes, two absent, the amendment fails.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would move the A3 Nash. Amendment, please, and ask for a roll call.
Representative Nash moves the A3 amendment and asks for a roll call. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Madam Chair, members, this is, again, another amendment to. Chair Dean has articulated he wants to have a bright line, and I believe we are saying that we, too, would like to have a bright line of delineation if his bill were to move forward. You know, this is for crimes of violence, and I think that that's another particularly bright line that should be defined and excluded from this. So, Madam Chair, this is a fairly important amendment, and we would urge its adoption, and if I hadn't already asked for it, I would ask for a roll call.
Okay. Yes, you did ask for a roll call. Representative Dean.
Well, Madam Chair and members, at the risk of sounding like I'm repeating myself, I'll repeat myself. Currently, we allow those individuals who have been convicted of crimes that are considered violent. When they are off supervision, they can currently vote. So, again, it would create confusion at the polls, and I believe that the bright line that I would like to see is a lot earlier in the process than that of Representative Nash.
Okay, thank you, Representative Dean.
And I would urge members to vote no.
Okay, thank you. And we will take a roll call requested.
Representative Dean?
No.
Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Bernardi?
No.
Representative Halverson? Representative Mann? Representative New and Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
With four nays and two ayes and two absent, the motion failed.
Okay, there. With four nays and two ayes, two absent, the amendment fails.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative
I would move the
Nash.
A4 and ask for a roll call.
Okay. Representative Nash moves Amendment A4 and requests a roll call. Would you like to make comments?
And Madam Chair, thank you, members. Again, this is another amendment that addresses a particularly violent and heinous crime. This is for violence and bodily harm. Again, I think that this is the bright line that if the author is truly looking to create a bright line, that this would be one that you know, your side should agree to, and I would urge its adoption.
Okay. Representative Dean, would you like to comment?
Madam Chair, while I appreciate Representative Nash's comments, again, I believe the bright line should exist for those who are currently locked up that they cannot vote, and for those that are out in the community expected to lead their best lives possible, that they would be allowed to vote. So I would recommend to members that we vote no on this amendment.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Okay, with that, we will take the roll.
Representative Dean?
No.
Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Bernardi?
No.
Representative Halverson? Representative Mann? No. Representative New? Representative O'Driscoll?
Yes.
So for Amendment 3, no, excuse me, Amendment 4, there are two absences. We have four nays, two ayes. The amendment fails.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would like to now turn it over to our testifiers, and just to remind members and testifiers about 2 to 3 minutes for the testifier, and that should leave us about 3 to 4 minutes or so for questions. Instead of going through all of the testifiers and trying to remember those questions, we'll actually allow the questions to take place at the time. So I'd like to turn it over to Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Mike Freeman. I'm the duly elected Hennepin County Attorney. I recall sitting in this room all night long on a capital bonding bill when I had the privilege of being in the Minnesota Senate. So thank you for welcoming me back, Madam Chair. I'm proud to be here today with a number of organizations and lots of good folks to say it is time to restore the vote. We need to restore the vote to those who have been incarcerated and now have been released. They have served their time, and they deserve the right to vote. It is the right thing to do. First, restoring voting rights to everyone living in our community is a matter of justice. Disenfranchisement of our neighbors on probation and parole serves no legitimate penal function, and it serves no legitimate electoral function. And I don't think anyone can seriously suggest that denying a person on parole the right to vote deters crime in any way. Instead, it's a vestige of the past where most people couldn't vote, and the franchise was reserved for the privileged few, white men over the age of 21 who owned property. But in the last two centuries, we've set those notions aside. We've come to see voting as a fundamental right of citizenship. Our campaign to restore the vote modernizes our law and helps us to live up to that vision. Second, a broad cross-section of the law enforcement community believes that restoring the voting rights is good for public safety. The Minnesota County Attorneys Association has unanimously voted to support this bill in previous years, and reiterates that to you, Mr. Chairman. As a society, we've decided that neighbors on probation and parole deserve a second chance to live in our communities and take on the rights and obligations of citizenship. Voting is one of the most sacred rights of citizenship. It makes no sense to exclude our neighbors from that act. It is punitive, and it does not help people returning to the path of full citizenship. Third, and something we in law enforcement, and particularly prosecutors, know very well, it is confusing, burdensome, and expensive to enforce. Every year, many people who are entitled to vote fail to do so because they are concerned about violating the law. And every year, disenfranchised people who misunderstand the law get themselves in trouble by voting. And we have to investigate each of those allegations and review each of those cases. And let me tell, Madam Chair, you and members of the committee, it's expensive, and we end up prosecuting 3 or 4 people a year, and they receive public service. It really is a law that should not be on the books. And so, in conclusion, restoring the vote is a simple, basic step to enhance our democracy. The time has come. I urge this committee and this legislature to pass Representative Dean's bill as presently drafted. Thank you very much.
And thank you, County Attorney Mike Freeman.
Questions?
Are there any questions by our members? Okay. So with that, we will move on to our next testifier, our State Secretary of State, Steve Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As Secretary of State, I think we need to keep investing in our democracy, and part of that means investing in people. I often like to say that I'm in the democracy business, and redemption is good for business. Today in Minnesota, as you've heard, approximately 50,000 people who would otherwise be eligible to vote are ineligible because they have a felony conviction, even though they have done their time, they're putting their lives back together, they're working, they're paying taxes, and they have not yet had their civil rights restored. We should want people who have left prison behind to feel invested, to feel a sense of ownership, to feel a sense of agency, and one really good way to do that is to make sure they feel that they have a choice in who governs them and how. So restoring the right to vote at the end of a prison term will give real opportunities to those who have left prison behind to become full members of their communities and our society. It would set an example for their children. Research has shown that children are more likely to vote as adults if their parents voted, if they grew up in a house where voting was a thing. And so we may inadvertently right now be disenfranchising one generation and future generations. And this isn't just good for the ex-offender, it's good for all of the rest of us too. We want people to feel invested in society so that they don't reoffend, so they don't take the wrong path, so they don't end up back where they once were. I have to add that restoring the right to vote is not a DFL or GOP idea. I'm happy to see that there is broad bipartisan support. And look at other states. Look at the state of Florida. They can't agree on anything. In 2018, they had a recount in their governor's race, a recount in their U.S. Senate race, but in that same year, in that same election just a few months ago, where it was 50-50 and everything else, 61% of voters in Florida voted to move in the direction of reenfranchisement for those who have left prison behind. 61%. They couldn't agree on anything else, but they really agreed in landslide proportions on that. So this law that we're talking about right now on the books has been with us since statehood. And in the 1850s and 1860s, there was no such thing as probation or supervised release. There were only a few felony crimes. Now there are over 300 felony crimes, or 350, I should say. And we have over 50,000 people who are not enfranchised. So I have to say, the confusion that County Attorney Freeman talked about goes both ways. Tragically, as he mentions in his office, there are people who are confused in the sense of maybe they think we're like North Dakota, maybe they believe that being out of prison they can vote. That's mistaken, and tragically so, and they go and do the wrong thing, and then they have to be prosecuted. But the confusion goes the other way as well. I will tell you, since I used to be among you as a state representative, I did a lot of door knocking. I was pretty obsessed with it. And every cycle, for five cycles, every single time, I would knock on a door, and this kind of thing would happen. I would hand them a brochure. They would look it up and down. They would look me up and down. And they would say, sounds great. You sound great. You would have my vote, but I can't vote for you. And I'd say, why not? And they'd say, well, I committed a felony 20 years ago. And I'd say, oh, are you still on paper? Are you still under a probationary sentence or on supervised release or something? Oh, no, I've been off paper for 10 years. In other words, for 10 years, they could have voted but didn't. They were confused about the law. So that confusion goes both ways, and that's one reason why, from just an administrative standpoint, this really makes sense as well. So this bill would make it easier to administer elections, eliminate confusion at the polls, and boost positive participation in society. So now I think is the time for Minnesota to join the growing number of states who are returning full civil rights to those who have left prison behind. I hope Minnesota can join those other states and walk that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary of State Steve Simon. Do members have any questions? Okay. Thank you. We are now going to move on to our next testifier, the Department of Corrections Commissioner, Paul Schnell. And up on deck, if they could be ready, is the Intergovernment Relations Office of the Mayor of St. Paul, Tao Mi.
Is Tao here?
Commissioner Schnell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Paul Schnell. I'm the new Commissioner of Corrections for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. Voting engages people in the democratic process. And we know that full engagement and in connection with the community is among the best measures of pro-social participation. Voting is part and parcel to community engagement. I recently met a man who was convicted of a felony and remains under supervision. He explained the irony that he was allowed to attend a school board meeting where they were discussing a policy that would have a direct impact on his children. but he was prohibited from voting for the very officials who were making up the school board itself. And he went on to remark that explaining this difference, explaining the reality that he could, one, participate but not vote, was very difficult for his teenage children to wrap their heads around. Finally, and importantly, after more than 30 years of working in public safety in a variety of different areas, I will say that I see no adverse impact on public safety by allowing individuals the right to vote after they have completed their time in custody. It simply makes good sense. We stand in support of this bill, and we urge its passage.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Members, do you have any questions? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the Commissioner, complicated issue. Certainly, as you can tell from the testifier or the crowd here, it's a big issue. But so what could we as the state or the courts do to lessen the dependence, if you wish, on probation? I mean, we have very long probation periods. What is your suggestion?
Commissioner Schnell.
Madam Chair, Representative, I do believe that, you know, there are a number of measures that are in consideration, that are being discussed by this the House of Representatives as well as in the Senate around looking at ways that we can address the links and terms of probation. But ultimately, I think the key issue here is that probation is, in fact, a time where we should be engaging people. That is the time when we want to really focus on recreating, reestablishing, and building and deepening community engagement and participation. Ultimately, that's the measure of success for us. That's the ways that those are the ways in which we ultimately ensure that people do well in our communities. It is that connection, and probation and supervised release are the way in which we help people do that.
Well, Madam Chair,
Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I guess I was looking for some mechanics from your perspective as to what are you suggesting, or maybe perhaps the author, other than if this bill were to not become law, what are some of the mechanics that either of you would suggest?
Commissioner Schnell.
Madam Chair, I guess just for a point of clarification, you're talking specifically about reducing probation terms?
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, yes.
Commissioner Schnell.
I think one of the things that it has little relevance, I think, on the issue of voting in and of itself. Fundamentally, the issue of voting, I think, as this bill points out, is really focused on engagement. The same time, as it relates, we're talking about engagement of people in the civic and democratic process. As it relates to probation terms specifically, I think we are looking at ways in which either the Sentencing Guidelines Commission could be engaged in those discussions around some of the reduction of probationary terms to do what is effective. And there is good science and good measures around what we know the science tells us around effectiveness of probation terms. And I think we need to engage our partners across the criminal justice system to try and really look at doing that, reducing those terms to reasonable levels to ensure that people have adequate opportunity to engage in the community and democratic process.
And okay, Madam Chair,
Chair Dean.
Representative Nash, I will just add that, you know, the probation periods that we have in the state of Minnesota are in many ways disproportional to a lot of other states. We tend to use that, as has often been discussed, as a way of handing down sentences that don't include time locked up. We have one of the lower rates of individuals that are incarcerated, locked up, in the state of Minnesota nationwide, but we also have one of the highest relative to the number of people on probation. Now, when we talk about length of time of probation, I think there are plenty of studies that show that the length of time does very little to impact what I would say is preventing the commission of new crimes. Generally, for individuals that receive probation, generally, if they reoffend, they tend to reoffend in the first few years. They don't tend to reoffend in year 15 or year 20 or year 25, or in some cases, you know, all the way up to 40 years. Yesterday there was testimony from a young woman who had a 40-year probation sentence. She will be off probation if she does not get an early release when she's 71. And this was for a drug crime. So I think that when we talk about probation, that's a topic that we need to talk about, because we do have an unbalanced system of the way we deal with probation. But I think relative to this notion of voting, we know that pro-civic behavior for individuals who are out there are one of the best deterrents for an individual committing another crime. So I think in many ways, when we think about allowing individuals to vote while they're still under probation, is one of those things that we help them engage the community and ultimately become the citizens that a lot of us view as the citizens we want them to be.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Commissioner Schnell. Now we have Intergovernment Relations Office. Now we have the intergovernmental relations from the Office of the Mayor of St. Paul, Tao Mei. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, my name is Tao Mei Shang, and I'm the Director of Intergovernmental Relations for the City of St. Paul in Mayor Melvin Carter's office. First, the mayor wants to thank the chief bill author and all the co-authors on this bill for your courage and leadership on this issue. He apologizes that he's not able to be here in person, but welcomes the opportunity in the future. I'm going to read a statement from the mayor, and I'm going to summarize it because it's a full page, and I'm going to keep it short. Dear Chair Dean, I write to urge the members of the Minnesota House Subcommittee on Elections to support House File 40 to restore the vote. In St. Paul, we are working hard to connect with our residents as we make policies that impact their lives. In as many ways as possible, we try to engage residents in ongoing dialogue to determine what it looks like to make a city that works for all of us. We know that our city is stronger when we have more voices at the table and more perspectives informing our policy decisions. For us, this includes those who have been formerly incarcerated. While we can encourage these residents to come to community meetings or contact us with their concerns, voting is the most fundamental form of citizen engagement. Restoring the right to vote allows full participation of our community members to participate in our democratic process. Again, I ask you and the members of the committee to support this legislation so we can fully welcome our residents back into our community and participate in the civic life of our city. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and I would like to correct it for the record for my benefit, Tao Mei Chong.
Yes.
Correct. Thank you very much. Are there questions by members? Okay, we can move on to our next testifier, which is Jason Adkins from Minnesota Catholic Conference, and up on deck is George. That's not good. That's not good. Sorry. Apologize for that. My mother-in-law just passed away yesterday, and I've had my phone on. And on deck, I have on deck George Beck, the chair of Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections. He could come to the rostrum. That'd be great. So, Jason Adkins, you may proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative Dean, members of the committee. My name is Jason Adkins. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, which is the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. We are proud members of the Restore the Vote Coalition and are glad to speak today in support of House File 40 to restore the vote. There's a statement of public policy rationales for why this is good policy that's been distributed to you by the page. Our basic premise is, of course, that solidarity with victims requires us to hold those who have committed crimes to be held responsible. But the purposes of our criminal justice system extend beyond simply responsibility and retribution. They extend to reconciliation, rehabilitation, and restoration. We believe that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. The basic premise of our supervised release program is that we want people to be out, who are out of the incarceration context, to be rebuilding their lives. That's good for the individual offender, but it's also good for society as well. Let me say a little bit about political participation and how it impacts the common good, not just the well-being of the offender coming out of the incarceration context. The Catholic Church believes that politics is a great conversation about how we order our lives together. It's not simply a power struggle, as strange as that may seem and counterintuitive sometimes. And similarly, community literally means etymologically a sharing of gifts. When we systematically disenfranchise or marginalize people in our community, something is lost in that great conversation. People's gifts are not being shared about how we order our life together. We as a state need to be intentional about making sure the voices of those who've been marginalized or those who've been offended, the poor, communities of color who are disproportionately disenfranchised, that they are reintegrated back into that important conversation. Otherwise, something important in that dialogue about what serves the whole community is lost. So for those reasons, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we strongly support voter restoration in House File 40 today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins, for your testimony. Now, George Beck is,
any questions?
Oh, yeah, are there any questions by members? Okay, welcome to the committee, Mr. Beck. And if you could state your name, and they've requested, we are being televised today, to spell your name. I want to welcome you and let people know that you're the chair of Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, my name is George Beck. I chair Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections. I'm a former chair of the Minnesota Campaign Finance Board. We support expanding the electorate to include all who are affected by our government. We support a true representative democracy in which the people control policymaking by voting. We do not support control of elected officials through large private contributions. And so we support House File 40, and I would note that 14 other states and the District of Columbia have a law similar to this. Minnesota needs to join these other progressive states. I read an op-ed in the Star Tribune recently that opposed restoring rights to released felons. I read it very carefully since I'm interested in this issue, and the only thing that struck me that was at all pertinent or very rational at all was the fact that we need to punish felons. Well, that makes no sense. They have served their time and they deserve to be able to vote again. It's been noted that Minnesota judges seem to favor long probationary periods for certain offenders and offenses. So someone in the community can be unable to vote for 20 or 30 years despite good behavior. That makes no sense. An individual's civil right to vote should be restored when incarceration is completed. Please vote in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Beck. Now on questions by members? Okay. Next on deck, and I'll say a couple so that we can keep moving along, is Kathy Sorensen. She is the League of Minnesota Cities Election Task Force Chair. And on deck is, and she's also the City of Blaine City Clerk. Welcome to our committee. And on deck is Pastor Brian Heron, thank you, Zion Baptist Church of Isaiah. You could please come to the testifiers table. And then on deck is Take Action Minnesota. If they can be seated up front, too, that would be helpful on the waiting in the wings there. So welcome to the committee, Kathy Sorensen. If you could spell your name for our viewing audience and the person keying in your name, that would be very helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy with a C, Sorensen, S-O-R-E-N-S-E-N. Thank you, Chair Dean, and for authoring this bill, and thank you to the committee for allowing me to testify. As you stated, I'm the Blaine City Clerk, but I also serve as a chair of the Elections Task Force for the League of Minnesota Cities, and it is in that capacity that I'm here today to testify in support of House File 40. The task force is made up of city election administrators throughout the state, and we help create, advise, and implement the League's legislative platform on elections. The League of Minnesota Cities supports the restoration of voting rights to felons once they have completed their term of incarceration. And we oppose the loss of voting rights for felons who serve the entirety of their sentence in the community and are not incarcerated. Along with our county partners, cities are the front lines for administering elections throughout the state. From registering first-time voters to handing out the beloved I Voted stickers, we are wholly committed to ensuring that eligible voters have the best voting experience possible at every step. We support this legislation because it is us, it's our election judges on the front line who must carry out the challenges when someone with a felony appears before us to vote, whether that person is doing so knowingly or unknowingly. Administering the voter challenge is an uncomfortable experience for all involved, nearby voters that may be hearing, election judges, but especially the voter. By making it very clear that if a felon is no longer incarcerated or was never incarcerated and therefore able to vote, there will be less confusion for our election judges, administrators, and more importantly, provides the best voter experience. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sorensen. Does anyone have any questions for our testifier? Okay. Yes, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think that anytime we have anyone who serves as an election judge at the table, we all owe you a big thank you. That's all.
Amazing election judges in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And welcome to the committee, Pastor, and hopefully I get it right this time, Heron.
Yes.
Yes, if you could spell your name for the teleprompter,
sure.
That would be great, and say who you're with.
Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Heron, H-E-R-R-O-N. I am with Isaiah, their clergy leadership, the Black Community Collective of Isaiah. I also represent the State Baptist Convention as chair of their Social Justice Committee. Here to support the Restore the Vote and the bill by the chair in the fullness of how it is written. One of the things that we have to ask is, to what end do we not allow people to vote? What good is it serving? I don't think we understand the continuum of punishment. When somebody gets out of incarceration, first of all, they're locked up. Now they're locked out. They're locked out of employment opportunities. They're locked out of being able to vote. They're locked out of being able to take care of their families. That doesn't help us to have safe streets and safe neighborhoods. If we want safe streets and safe neighborhoods, then we can't be tough on crime. We got to be smart on crime. And we have to begin to do things that help people to reengage and be reinvested in community. As one who has been incarcerated and couldn't vote, I know the pain of that. And I know the feeling of not being able to participate. So I want to urge you today to restore the vote. This is about redemption. If we don't believe that people can change, then none of us can change. And there's no redemption for any of us. We have to believe in redemption. And we have to believe that people have the ability to change. Probation is a whole nother issue because that's all messed up. Probation is not distributed equally. In Duluth, it's one way. In Rochester, the sentences, the terms are longer. And we have some of the longest probation terms of any state. And so probation isn't the issue. The issue is restoring people's rights when they have paid their debt to society, allowing them to reengage in society so that they can be successful. Facts show that people who are pro-social, reengaged in society, are least likely to reoffend. All the states who have voter restoration show that their recidivism rates are lower. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Pastor Heron. Take Action Minnesota will be testifying next in Women's March.
Madam Chair, can you ask if anyone has any questions?
Yes, thank you, Chair Dean. We appreciate that. Any questions by our members for our testifier? Representative Bonner.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, Pastor Heron, I just wanted to actually quickly make a comment and say thank you so much for being here. And I really appreciate what you said about being locked up and locked out. I think that that is the underlying message we need to underscore for today, and to understand that while we all appreciate in the name of justice that folks accept that if you do the crime, so to speak, you do the time, right? But once that time has been served and once that debt to society has been paid, folks should be able to have their rights restored. And I want to thank you for making that important point and underscoring that for us today and for all of your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. No further questions. We will move on to our next testifier from Take Action. If you could introduce yourself and spell your name for the record. Appreciate that.
Hi, my name is Mary Spaulding. My first name is spelled M-A-R-Y. My last name is spelled S-P-A-U-L-D-I-N-G. And I am a leader with Take Action Minnesota. I am also the director of Political Healers Justice, new organization that had just started recently. And I'm here today because I'm actually a felon. There was a time when I was on probation, actually parole. And during that time, there was a big decision being made about my kids' education, saying, do we raise taxes to pay for more after-school activities in school? And I couldn't vote because I knew if I did, even though it was a very important issue to me because my children's education is the most important thing to me, that I would actually be causing a crime. That bill that actually people were voting on didn't pass due to the fact that there were so many people that in my community that couldn't vote and didn't know what the bill was actually about. But it hurt so much because I literally didn't have a voice during that time on what I wanted to be done for my children and their education. And I feel that whenever a mother, a person, doesn't have a voice, not only about their own life, but then how they're going to raise their children and how their children are be educated, it affects every single one of us. Before that and even after that, I've been an avid voter. I never missed the time that I could vote other than when I couldn't vote because I was on parole. I still every day regret that I wasn't able to vote. I regret the decisions that I made that made me be able to be on parole and probation, but I would not change any decisions that I've ever made when I voted. I've always voted with my heart and my soul, and I believe that if we don't restore people's rights to vote, we're not only affecting people like me, but we affect my children and their children and my grandchildren. And if they don't have a voice and actually have somebody to look up to and see that they're voting on a regular basis, they don't vote. And for me, that's one of the biggest things that I've ever gave to my kids, is the opportunity to know that they can vote and how to vote. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Spaulding. And you brought a guest with you today. This is
Riley Spaulding King.
Hi, welcome to the committee today, Riley.
Hi,
thanks for coming. Do we have any questions by our members? Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next is Jennifer Polzin, from the Executive Director of Tubman. And on deck is Rob Stewart. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Polzin. If you could say your name, pronounce it how it's supposed to be said, and spell it for the record, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Jennifer Polzin. That is Jennifer, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, Polzin, P-O-L-Z-I-N. And I am the CEO of Tubman, a multi-service organization that serves about 25,000 people every year in Hennepin, Washington, and Ramsey counties, and the metro. The people we serve and their families have experienced many forms of trauma, relationship violence, assault, exploitation and trafficking, addiction, homelessness, and more. In addition to our crisis intervention services to address their immediate safety and needs and well-being, we also work alongside them toward long-term stability. personal achievement, and healing after that trauma. For many of the survivors and families with whom we work, a critical piece of that long-term stability is rebuilding connections. Many have been isolated by abusive partners or traffickers, or they've lost relationships because of addiction, or have been pushed to the margins of society by homelessness and poverty. Many are teenagers or young people impacted by these issues who are still figuring out their place in the world. And some have criminal records. We work with them to resolve any criminal justice issues they have, and then we help them move forward into their future. Voting is one important piece of rebuilding those connections. The right to vote is a fundamental piece of our democracy. It encourages participation in civic life. It motivates law-abiding behavior and rebuilds those all-too-important connections and ties to neighborhood and community. Our organization is named after Harriet Tubman, conductor on the Underground Railroad, Civil War soldier, suffragette, and much more. Harriet's life's work was helping people be free and then helping freed slaves and many others realize the promise of America. During her lifetime, felony disenfranchisement laws were one tool used to systematically prevent freed Black Americans from participating in elections. And today, we know those laws continue to disproportionately impact minority and marginalized communities. This is not a legacy we wish to continue in Minnesota. Anything that effectively creates second-class citizenship in this country is a betrayal of all that Harriet Tubman lived for. Tubman's vision for the future is one of thriving people, healthy relationships, and peaceful communities. Preventing people from voting does not help them to thrive. It does not create peaceful and engaged communities. We must do better, and today we have that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Paulzine. Any questions from our members? Okay, thank you. Our next testifier is Rob Stewart. If you could say spell your name for the record as well as who you're representing, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, and thank you to the state leaders and the members of the public who are here today. My name is Rob Stewart, R-O-B-S-T-E-W-A-R-T. And I would like to voice my strong support for House File 40. Like tens of thousands of other Minnesotans, this is a very personal issue for me, because not only am I a father and a husband, the executive director of a nonprofit, and a doctoral candidate at the University of Minnesota, but I'm also a felon who couldn't vote for almost 10 years. I'm from Owatonna, and in my 20s, I made choices that I'm not proud of, and I was convicted of felony drug possession. In the more than 2 years I was incarcerated, I sobered up, I participated in various programs, I enrolled in college courses. And I also began to invest my energy in making amends and doing what I could do to give back to the community through tutoring and volunteering, which I continued after my release. When I got out, I tried to get my life back on track. But anyone with a felony record can tell you that everything in your life gets much harder. Trying to find someone who will hire you, trying to find a landlord who will rent to you, and even trying to find a college that's willing to accept you. And on top of that, you can't vote. As Commissioner Schnell mentioned earlier, it doesn't matter that you might have kids in the local school district and want to vote on the school funding referendum, or that you own a business and are directly impacted by the decisions made by the city or state governments, or that you're paying taxes. As citizens, we vote because we're invested in the future of our towns, our state, and our country. Who we let vote sends a signal whose voices we value and who we include as part of our communities. So for me, even though I was living in the community, every election became a reminder that I was an outsider, that I wasn't included as part of my community, of our community, and my voice didn't matter. To be perfectly honest, I was tempted to just check out and stop caring. The irony, of course, is that we expect people involved in the criminal justice system to become productive citizens who are engaged in their communities. Yet, we block them from participating in the most basic, the most fundamental of duties of citizenship. So the reality is that the roughly 52,000 Minnesotans that we're talking about are our coworkers, our neighbors, our friends, and our family members. So I ask, Shouldn't we do what we can to encourage their investment in their own futures, their families' futures, and the futures of our communities? As for my own situation, I'm happy to report that my life has taken a very positive direction since my conviction. I got married, and we have a perfect 15-month-old little girl and a little boy coming in April. I finished my bachelor's, summa cum laude, from the University of Minnesota, and I'm almost finished with my PhD, where my research focuses on barriers to successful reentry and reintegration following criminal justice involvement. And things are going well. But I can honestly tell you that it wasn't until I finally got the right to vote back that I started to feel whole again, that I started to feel like I was part of our community. It was really important to me, and I know it's really important to thousands of other Minnesotans who still can't vote. So I encourage you to support felon voting rights restoration in House File 40.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Stewart. Do our members have any questions?
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dean, Mr. Stewart, I want to commend you first off for obviously making an incredible turnaround in your life, and you are clearly a success story here today before us. One of the things that really stood out to me, and I know you spoke to this about the difficulties that a lot of felons face finding housing, getting accepted to school, those kinds of finding a job, those kinds of things. But you also mentioned that you have also a unique perspective as a dad, as a business owner, and you know, outstanding citizen in our community. And I'm just curious how not being able to vote has impacted those aspects of your life as a business owner and as a father, and what that meant to you.
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bonner. It's been a really difficult process. You know, like I said, we have a 15-month-old, and we're looking at things like preschools and all that type of stuff, which seems like it's really early to do that, but I guess that's what you do. there's a sense of a feeling of helplessness that pervades this experience that I don't know that necessarily it has been touched on. There's a sense that there's nothing that you can do. You can only come so far. But that's as far as you can go, and so when it comes to things like running an organization, and trying to engage with city leaders and that type of thing, but not actually being a voter, not being able to say yes, I'm one of your voters or whatever, it not only kind of frustrates that type of relationship, but it's incredibly awkward, right? Here I am a parent, here I am, I'm running a nonprofit, and now I can vote, but previously when I couldn't, having to bring that up to people in completely unrelated situations, right? I would say that there's a sense of helplessness that's really hard to put into words, I think.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to ask questions? Mr. Stewart? Okay, well, thank you. The last testifier on our list before we move to public testimony. Chair Dean, do you have any comments? I have Amity.
Madam Chair, I believe that's for the next bill.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, no, that's
he's
fine.
Like, really? Thank you. Do we have...
Our list is exhausted.
Our list is exhausted. Thank you. And now we're going to provide test people who in the audience would like to testify.
Well, we only have a few minutes
Okay. Because
we do have another bill on the agenda, Madam Chair. I would think that we might have time for one or two testifiers from the audience. If there are a couple individuals who want to raise their hands and want to be bold and come up and say a few words, yes. We have one taker. Is there another person that would like to come up? I think that we should have Anika Bowie come up and speak as well. So why don't you all come up, and we'll give you a couple minutes, and we'll have a couple questions. As a reminder to other members of the public, that we will have opportunities in other committee stops as we move forward.
Okay, so Chair Dean, that's your decision, correct?
Yes, I just changed the rules a little bit, Madam Chair, and thank you. So I'd like to turn it over to Renee to speak, and she will tell a little bit about herself and why she supports this.
And what I'd like to do is I'd like to make sure that we keep decorum and that there's no clapping. Each testifier will have 2 minutes, and if the we'll ask our members if they have questions after the testifier is done speaking. And so thank you. Please say your name and spell it for the record and who you're with. Thank you.
My name is Renee Brown Goodell, R-E-N-E-E, Brown, just like a color. Goodell, G-O-O-D-E-L-L, as we like to say in my family, like Roger, but nobody hates us. I am here only for one reason. I'm a felon. I'm a federal felon. I am still on probation and supervised release. None of the current political situation is my fault. I haven't been able to vote since 2011. Having said that, it is something that is very, very dear to me. But I come off of paper in 91 days. On May 15th, my right is restored by law in Minnesota. I will be voting again. But I did time in Waseca for 39 months with at least 500 to 700 ladies who don't have the same advantages I have. They don't have the same background. They don't have the same support. They don't have the same education. They don't have the same belief in themselves that their voice matters. And I think as a system, when we disenfranchise people and tell them that they don't matter and they are not good enough to speak out, we send a horrible message. The ladies that I lived with didn't look like me. We were very different as day and night. And the reality is that they came from lives of severe trauma, abuse, just horrible places. And that is the bulwark of federal prison in America. And if you can stand next to me in the line at Cub while we are checking out and look me in the eye and say, you're not good enough to vote, and then do it tomorrow and do it the next day, but then all of a sudden on May 16th, look at me and say, hey, who are you going to vote for? Then I think you have a reasonable argument that this disenfranchisement that we currently live under makes sense. I would like to encourage Commissioner Schnell to encourage voting education while people are incarcerated, because so many people don't even understand it. Before they're released, have them register. Explain it to people. I'm not going to recover all the reasons it is good, because that's already been said. What I am telling you is that we need to start re-empowering the women and the men that we beat down in this system and come in that way. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. We'll move on to our next testifier, and if you could say your name and spell it for the record and who you're with, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for having me. My name is Anika Bowie, A-N-I-K-A-B-O-W-I-E. I am the lead organizer of the Restore the Vote Minnesota Coalition, as well as vice president of Minneapolis NAACP. And I am here because we are educators. We are parents. We are legal experts. We are criminal justice reformers. And we are lawmakers. And we are in support of House File 40. We are in support of Restore the Vote. We are also people with felony convictions, but that does not tell the entire story. As teachers, as parents, and business owners, and veterans, we support these members of society to fully integrate back into our community, safe communities, contribute to communities. We also support members of society to be voters. And the big question is, what is that going to take? Yes, that's going to take this bill to be passed through committees. It's also going to ask us, what is it going to take for us to trust and forgive and to change the label and the stigma of what we call or who we call criminals? And also, it's going to take this change of idea of rehabilitation, and does it work? And in Minnesota, we have the Department of Correction Commissioner here saying that he supports Restore the Vote. And in Minnesota, we have a rehabilitation process that we tell people once they go through our court system, our prison system, our probation system, and while they're in community, that they are being rehabilitated. They are changing their lives. And they're doing that inside of our schools, inside of our jobs, our families, and churches. And we ask that we also include them inside of our elections, inside of our voting booths. And very briefly, I have a story. A few days ago, I had the honor to support my uncle who was being released from prison. I took an hour-long drive up there with my friend Leslie Redman, who's also the vice or the president of Minneapolis NAACP. And we talked about the criminal justice system and how those who are incarcerated not only are locked out, but the family members who support them are also suffering from that stigma. And we got there and we picked him up and he was so happy. We gave him a big hug. After 7 years in prison, he was able to be a free man. And he had so much paperwork. He was excited about, I just earned my driver's license. He has a job. He secured housing. And he had a paper by Secretary of State Steve Simon that said that he had the right to vote. And with him being, you know, returning citizen, I want to make sure that he is always law-abiding. And I had to share with him that it's complicated. That with him being on parole, it's complicated. But that what I'm doing, what many people in this room is doing right now, is advocating for him to speak in truth of him having his right to vote. Integrating into society should not be complicated. Your laws, the voting laws, should not be complicated for those are returning home. And we urge everyone to restore the vote and pass House File 40. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Bowie. Is there any, or do our members have any questions for either of the testifiers? Representative Hellerson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to raise up something that I heard from Ms. Bowie, and that is you use the language that people with felonies, that we're talking about people with felonies. Too often I hear the words felons, right?
Yes.
I have diabetes, and I cringe when everyone says, you're a diabetic, because mm-hmm. I'm way more than a diagnosis. I'm way more than an action. And so I just appreciated that language, and I wanted to raise it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe we have one other testifier, and he'll be brief, and then I'll move into closing comments, and hopefully we'll move on to vote on this bill.
Thank you, and welcome to our committee. If you could state your name and spell it for the record, and if you're representing somebody, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. And my name is George Gibson, G-I-P-S-O-N. I'm here representing Next Step Services, but more than that, I'm a veteran. I'm a business owner. I also have a number which was 060-43041, which means that I was also a felon, which I prefer to say returning citizen. For me, if we boil this all down, there's some very strong pieces for me as a vet. And part of that piece is that I can be a business owner, pay all of my taxes, pay all of my property taxes, pay all of the taxes that are required, yet I can't have a say in government. So taxation without representation for me is a critical piece of what I signed on to defend the Constitution. I think that any time that we move voter registration or not being able to vote and we move that into a disenfranchised piece of punishment, then we've missed the point. The point is that if there's any of us that are working, paying our taxes, being a part of community, then we should be able to be represented by our government, of which we have an opportunity to vote for. I think that's a fundamental constitutional right. And I think that every party across the board should be concerned anytime that we move taxation without representation into voter disenfranchisement. That's a very serious piece. It was a very serious piece for the state of Minnesota when it was at the very foundation of moving disenfranchised voters onto one side of the fence or the other. And I think that if we are going to be responsible citizens and say, as part of probation, that you have to have a job and you have to go to work, then you should also, and they'll have to be paying taxes, obviously, that they should also have the ability to vote for their school board, for my representative, for the President of the United States. That's just fundamental constitutional law for me. And so today I had the privilege of going in for my VA clinical appointment, and I happened to bring, they all asked, why are you suited and booted today, Mr. Gibson? And I replied that I was coming here, and they asked why. And when I spoke to the nurse, when I spoke to the doctor, when I spoke to the other two vets that were sitting next to me in line, they were all in awe that anyone that is paying their taxes couldn't vote. And so I would implore you to move this from a punishment piece into a piece of restoration, because there are a lot of great individuals out here that deserve the right to vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Gibson. Okay, so any questions from our members? Okay, so Representative Dean, it's my understanding that you would like to move on to your closing remarks?
I'll wrap up very quickly, Madam Chair, and we have a few minutes for discussion if folks want to discuss, and then I believe we should go to vote. The next bill is a pretty clear bill, and hopefully we can wrap that up by the time we're scheduled to end, which I believe is 11:15.
Right. Okay. Proceed, Chair Dean.
So, Madam Chair, members of the public, we've had some great testimony today. The issue around voting is something that's near and dear to almost everybody in Minnesota. And for those individuals that have lost their right to vote, it's important to them as well. For those of you who don't know, I lost my voting rights. And back when I lost my voting rights, it was common knowledge amongst individuals that had felony records that you could never vote. And that's still, unfortunately, common knowledge for a lot of other individuals. I went to another extreme, and I decided that I wanted to really vote. Voting was really critical to me. So I applied for a pardon. And I ultimately received a pardon from the state of Minnesota. And so I was able to live my life for a long period of time as if I'd never committed a crime. Well, now I'm pretty public about it, so I can't live as if I've never committed a crime. But I want to dispel a few myths. One of the things that we heard from a few testifiers was issues of addiction. And in some ways, we are penalizing people with addiction that end up committing crimes because they are losing their right to vote. We also know disproportionately that people impacted are communities of color relative to individuals convicted of crimes for similar behavior that under individuals don't get the same types of sentences and the same types of crimes. This is definitely something that will help reduce recidivism. And I also wanted to dispel the myth about this is a Democratic thing, it's going to help Democrats. We know that roughly 65% of the people that currently can't vote in the state of Minnesota live outside of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I tell a lot of my colleagues that one thing you can count on voters is they generally vote their geography. And if you look at the voting map from this past year in the state of Minnesota, you would see that many individuals out in rural parts of the state of Minnesota, they tended to vote Republican. And, of course, those in Minneapolis and St. Paul tended to vote Democrat. So I don't think it's an either-or situation. I think this impacts both parties the same, and that we need to start to move forward. And, again, I believe it's time for Minnesota to move forward and update the way in which we treat those individuals who we expect to be great citizens and do all those right things. So I encourage members to support House File 40, and I look forward to moving it on to back to government operations.
Okay, thank you. So I would like to thank you very much for your remarks. Is there any, I am not aware of any other amendments for this bill. Okay. Is there any further discussion of this bill?
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just quickly want to say that it's clearly that there's a time for this policy, and the time is now for us to move forward with this voting restoration. We have heard and learned more every single year about the roots that these kinds of policies around the country have had in racial injustice. I spent some time in Montgomery, Alabama, and Selma, Alabama this summer learning about the roots of these policies. I spent some time at the Equal Justice Initiative, and it's astonishing to me that the language we continue to use in order to keep these policies in place, our language, as the representative from Tubman said, that has its roots in the Civil War and incarceration dating back to those days. And so this is has strong bipartisan support, which I think tells us that it's time to move forward. It's time to make sure that people in Minnesota who are participating in their communities, who are raising their children, who are paying their taxes and working, have the opportunity to petition their government and choose who represents them. And I will be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Dean has renewed his motion that House File 40, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion does prevail. Oh, excuse me. I was supposed to do that. I was thinking I was adjourning the meeting. We have more work to do. So excited about this bill. So thank you very much. Now, Chair, we have another bill that hopefully we can get through and by 11:15. Otherwise, we will be asking you if you would like us to come back this evening to finish
Madam
it.
Chair, I'm hoping that we do not come back. And for those individuals leaving, if you could to have your conversations to get outside.
Excuse me, if people could
we'll be able to conduct the meeting.
We can't hear you. If the people in the viewing audience could keep their voices down, we cannot hear Chair Dean. So if you could please allow us to convene our business. Chair Dean, go ahead. Could you please say that again? We could not hear.
Members of the public who are leaving, if you could wait to have your conversations till you get outside, it will allow us to complete our business here today. Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 489, and it would be referred to Committee on Government Operations.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Would you like to discuss your bill or move into any amendments that may be offered?
Well, I think first let me discuss it, and then we can move to the amendments.
Okay, thank you.
So what House File 489 would do is it would allow individuals who travel on the transit systems in the state of Minnesota to actually move without paying a fare. Now, a lot of people say on election day, why would we do that? Well, there are some individuals that the fare might be sort of create difficulty for them in getting to the polls. People say, well, that's going to cost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. We did this back in 2014, and I believe that the cost was somewhere between $60,000 and $70,000. And people say, well, that seems like so little. How is that possible? Just as a reminder, many of our riders that ride on public transportation buy monthly passes, and whether they're riding free on election day or if they're riding with their pass on election day, it doesn't have a huge impact on that budget. I do not have a current fiscal note, although I do see someone from Metro Transit here that could probably speak to this. It will have a fiscal note by the time it gets to the Transportation Finance Committee. So again, that's what this bill does. It allows the Metropolitan Council to provide rides free on Election Day.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, would you have an amendment that you would like to offer to get it in the order you'd like it in?
I do not, Madam
Chair.
Okay,
thank you. Are there any? Yes, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to get clarification on the scope of the jurisdiction of this particular committee. I don't believe we're a finance committee, and I just want to understand that as we continue our discussion. Can somebody comment on that?
Thank you, Representative Dean, or Chair Dean.
Madam Chair, we are not a finance committee.
Right, okay.
But it will have the finance fiscal note necessary as we move forward. But this does involve elections, and so we believed it was important for it to come to Elections Committee.
Are there any other amendments that are going to be offered today?
Madam Chair, first of all, I think it's important that we move the bill before the committee for consideration before we entertain any amendments.
Representative Dean, I thought you already did, but if you
haven't, I did move it before
right,
the
but
committee.
You may.
I would move this bill and that it be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair, to Representative Halverson's comments, the A1, A2, and A3 amendments are all three my amendments. And in committee, there really isn't when you're offering amendments and working on these kinds of things because we're all under the umbrella of the Ways and Means Committee, which is a finance committee. There is jurisdiction for us to talk about these. And in the interest of time, Madam Chair, I introduced these three amendments for one reason and one reason only. I'm the only member in this committee that's from Greater Minnesota. I heard County Attorney Mike Freeman earlier regarding disenfranchisement to voters. And although this says that we will deal with the Met Council and makes references to other standard transportation systems across the state of Minnesota, there are a number of places in this greater Minnesota that don't have transit systems that will be disenfranchised by this bill. And just quickly to the amendments, one, I wanted to take money from the Department of Transportation, which I know they don't have the money to do, to take from the Secretary of State's office, which they don't have the money to do, and also the Met Council, which comes to us and asks for money, and we're going to ask them to absorb this, but yet we're not going to do anything for Greater Minnesota on this. And so to save time, but to make the point, it's very important that if we're going to be concerned about voter rights and in not disenfranchising individuals, think about the people from Greater Minnesota. I'm starting to see a pattern develop that Greater Minnesota is being treated differently, not only in this committee, but in other committees in the legislature. And so I just want to be on the record, again, as a lone member from Greater Minnesota, sharing that concern that I have, because we have a lot of individuals who may experience at a different level the things that the folks in the Twin Cities 7-county metro area do, but are disenfranchised. And so I'm going to encourage people today to vote no on this bill.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And I would love to sit down and have a conversation with you to how to assure that people in Greater Minnesota have the same amount of access to the polls that this bill would give some low-income people in the metropolitan council sort of jurisdiction area. So I'm more than happy to sit down and try to figure out if there's a way we can put something together to help those individuals in Greater Minnesota.
Chair Dean, I think
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Dean, the bill is going to be up today. We're going to have a vote on it as other stops. I encourage you to visit with my LA to get on the calendar. I'd be happy to visit with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll ask my LA right now if we could try to arrange that.
Okay.
So it's the classic, here and have your people contact my people.
I guess we're doing that.
Okay. Now we're getting out of order here. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And sadly, none of my people are here in the room with us, so I'm out of luck on that. But Chair Dean, a couple questions for you, if I could. Does this bill apply to Metro Mobility, or are you trying to include them in this?
No,
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, this applies to regular service.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, Chair Dean, you say on election day in your bill, does that include special elections, referendum, any instances other than the standard election that we have every 2 years? Are you affording for those times where we have perhaps like the election that we had a week and a half ago up in now almost Senator Rarick's district? Are you affording for that as well?
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, I would refer to line 1.11 where it says on the day a state general election is held.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did see that, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, but is there some reason that you don't want to get people to the polls on special elections?
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair, I would not say that there is a reason why I do not want to get people there. For the sake of clarity with this particular bill, we're calling out state general elections as a date, because in the end, we never know what a special election could be. It's very, 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 very rare that we actually have special elections statewide. As a matter of fact, I don't believe we've had one in quite some time. And this is intended to be around statewide elections. So what you're talking about with special elections tend to be more locally based elections. And if I would carry what you're talking about forward, that would mean in certain segments of the transportation map or geography, it would be free on that day versus the whole system. So that's why this is spelled out the way it is.
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess, you know, I am in the 7-county metro, but would point out to my colleague, Representative O'Driscoll, that we have a lot of farms out in Carver County, and folks in the 7-county metro area that may live in parts of my district, there is no bus, period. So I wonder how you're going to accommodate for that, because we don't have transportation that services the city of my own dwelling of Waconia. We don't have bus service there. How do you accommodate for that? Because, you know, I'd like for my people to go and vote for me if you say that they vote their geography. You know, I'm just wondering how you plan on accommodating that, Chair Dean.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, again, the bill calls out fixed route public transit, and I think that what you're talking about is a totally different definition, and as well as my comment earlier to Representative Driscoll, if you want to sit down with me, I would be happy, maybe sit down with both of you, to try to figure out a system that could work to accommodate people in your region as well.
Well, Madam Chair, not to belabor the point. Thank you, Madam Chair. But not to belabor the point, the bill is here in front of us now.
Absolutely.
The bill is not drafted to accommodate any of the people that live in my district or Representative O'Driscoll's district. You know, it's very clearly metro-centric. I would say that's fair to describe it that way. And yet I live in the 7-county metro. There is no accommodation for the people of Waconia or Cologne or Carver or any of those folks, and I just find that troubling. And, you know, I've always been encouraged in the past, if your bill is not quite ready, perhaps you don't move it on and you fix it before it gets moved on. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, I appreciate your comments. My offer is still out there. This is something that we did back in 2014 for the people of the Metropolitan Council provider area. There's certainly been quite some time since that time. I believe there was a period of time that we had a different majority in the House and the Senate, and there was opportunity for those members to bring forward legislation at that time of their concerns for people having access to transportation in their jurisdiction, in their region. So my bill is before us today. I am hoping that we'll be able to vote, and I think we have a couple individuals that would like to testify as well.
Representative Nash.
And Madam Chair, perhaps I spoke too soon when I said I didn't want to belabor the point.
I was wondering about that, Representative Nash.
You were thinking it. I said it for you. So to the author, or perhaps Mr. Shetton is here, he could elucidate on this. Does this accommodate for the opt-outs in the 7-county metro, the transit providers?
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, it does not apply. Again, it is for fixed route public transit within the Met Council. So opt-outs would not be included in that.
Thank you for that clarification.
Is there any further discussion? I am not aware of any other amendments to House File.
We do have a testifier.
We do have a testifier. Okay. And just one moment, please. Okay, so who is our testifier? Is it Amita?
No, it's Amity Foster,
okay,
Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair Dean. Welcome to our committee. If you could say your name and spell it for the record, that would be great.
My name is Amity Foster. It's A-M like Minnesota, I-T-Y, F-O-S-T-E-R. I'm a member of the Twin Cities Transit Rider Union. So we just heard a lot of testimonies about making voting accessible to more people. It is fundamental to allowing people to participate in our democracy. We already do so much to open up our voting process. Early voting, time off from work, same-day registration, mail-in ballots. I believe that we should do even more, like free transit on Election Day. So I don't know how many of you take the bus on a regular basis. I do. Last year, fares increased. There's a good chance that they'll increase in the future. So here's how it works. I pay my fare. I have 2.5 hours to use it. And then I have to pay that same fare again if I'm going anywhere else. So that can be up to $5 a day. Voting can take a long time, especially in like a busy election, an exciting election. You may actually have to pay two fares to get around to go vote. A person's access to transit and their ability to pay that fare should not be a barrier to them voting. So I encourage you to pass this today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Do our members have any questions? Okay, thank you. And would Chair Dean, would you like to make any further comments on your bill? Oh, and so before we do that, we're going to ask if anyone else in the audience would like to testify today. Nope. Okay, Chair Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I phoned a friend while I was out, and actually some of the suburban opt-outs this does apply to. If they're receiving financial assistance under Minnesota State Statute Section 473.388 or operating under State Statute 473.405, which I believe is several of the opt-outs, it does apply to them. So just to correct a statement I made earlier to Representative Nash.
Any further discussion? Okay, Chair Dean, would you like to wrap up your bill?
No, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion to re-refer this to the Committee on Government Elections. This is something we've done in the past. The financial impact is not significant, and I believe it's something we should do now, and I would encourage members to vote yes.
Madam Chair?
Representative
Odisco. I know we have a lot of committees, but I'm not familiar with the Government Elections Committee that he just wanted to
Government Operations.
Okay, for the record, Representative Dean renews his motion that House File 489 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Is that correct, Representative?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much. All those seeing no further discussion or amendments, all those in favor of the motion to pass this bill signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. House File 40 is now recommended. 489 is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Thank you, members. The meeting is now adjourned.